Dr. Todd Gordon, it's a pleasure to talk to you today. You've written an amazing book called Imperialist Canada. Do you want to give me a brief overview of what that's about?
It's an attempt to look at the various ways in which the Canadian government and Canadian corporations are engaging in an agenda of dispossession of poor and Indigenous peoples in Canada and in the Global South, with the aim of expanding the foothold and the profitabilities of Canadian companies. And this is something that the Canadian government and Canadian companies are doing systematically as they basically push into new regions in Canada that they haven't yet conquered fully, and as they race around the globe in the search of new areas, new markets to make profits. And they're becoming quite successful at it, and as a result, we're seeing an increasingly aggressive Canadian foreign policy posture from the government. And so I think that it's time that we had a better, deeper, more structural analysis of what's happening here. And the old ideas that Canada is some benign liberal force in the global order, I don't ever think that was accurate, but I think it's even less true today. And I think we need more critical accounting of what's happening.
Now, there's an ever-increasing military budget in Canada as well. Where do you see the links? Are we simply making the world safe for Canadian corporations to do business? Or is there anything to say about, you know, the old peacekeeping notion of the Canadian military?
Well, I don't think there's anything to say for the old peacekeeping notion of the military. And I think we need to also be more critical of that peacekeeping history, because it's not as cut and dry as people think. And I'm sorry to say, I know there's a lot of people on the left who hang on to the idea that there is this past in Canadian foreign policy and security policy where the military engaged in peacekeeping, and we need to get back to that because it's better than fighting in wars, which is where the Harper government is taking us, obviously. But The history of peacekeeping is a little bit more complicated than that. So I'll just point that out. I think there was some geopolitical reasons in the Cold War led Canada to get involved in peacekeeping in the first place. It's not just the sort of liberal progressive thing. And also writers like Shireen Razak have pointed out the very racist premises that underlie much of peacekeeping in her book White Knights, Dark Threats, which focuses on the Somali affair. But having said that, I think, as a number of people who study the military quite closely have pointed out, is Canada doesn't do peacekeeping. It's not a peacekeeping military. Its contributions in terms of money and in terms of human personnel to peacekeeping in the world today is minuscule. It's almost irrelevant, if not completely irrelevant, to what the Canadian military is doing. And I would go so far as to say, of course, that the projected plans that are being projected for the Canadian military right now by the Tories, including all the spending that they're going to do on warships, on fighter jets, on more special forces operations and so on, have nothing to do with peacekeeping. That's not what they're building. They're building a war-fighting military, and I would say that it is quite connected to the interests of Canadian capitalists. Canadian capitalists become more and more global than the Canadian ruling elite. Including the military, have started to take on a different perspective that may not have been so clear in the past towards the global order and what's going on in the South, and they increasingly see more threats in the South. And I don't think it's an accident that you're seeing all this increase in military spending and an increase in military adventures abroad. At the same time, you're seeing an increase in the expansion of Canadian corporations abroad. And it may not always be, the link may not always be perfectly direct, but I think that we can't see these things as coincidental. And in fact, if we really wanted to and we had more time, I could actually make some of those connections, particularly in the case of Libya with SNC-Lavalin and Suncor resources, and even in Afghanistan today, where you're now starting to see the push for mining and a new mining regime in the country, in which Canadians, not just Canadian company mining companies, but also financial companies, corporate law firms who deal with mining, and consulting firms are helping the Afghan government deal with a new program for selling exploration licenses.
it seems like a classic notion to either excuse or essentially make excuses for our military adventures. One of the great excuses is, oh, we're just, you know, we're beholden to America and their agenda. And you say that's not necessarily so. Mm-hmm. You say we're to a great degree acting on our own interests as an imperialist country. Mm-hmm.
And it is a convenient excuse, and I think you get that from many of the same people who harken back to the glory days of Canadian peacekeeping and who suggest we should go back to it, that we're working too closely in terms of foreign policy with the U.S. military, sorry, or that we're being told to do what we do by the Americans. And no, I don't think that's accurate. The Americans clearly wanted Canada to be involved in the war in Iraq, the invasion in 2003, in which Canada didn't participate. There may have been some push by the Americans for Canada to get involved in Afghanistan in 2005 or 2006, when we basically took the lead role in Kandahar. And some people have argued, and perhaps there's some truth to this, that was a response in part to assuaging the Americans and some of their frustrations with Canada for not participating in Iraq by taking a lead role in Kandahar. Having said that, the reality is that the Canadian ruling class and Canadian corporate leaders are as interested and concerned about the stability of third world countries and of global capitalism in general as their American counterparts are, because they have interests just as their American counterparts do. In fact, you can make the case, even though the American economy is 10 times greater than the Canadian economy, and in absolute terms is far more American foreign investment and ownership of assets in the third world than there is Canadian, but the orientation, if you control for the size of the economy, it's much greater amongst Canadian capital. They have a greater orientation relative to their size than do the Americans towards third world and using the third world as a source for profits and profitability. So even though Canada may often side with the United States in its foreign and security policy, and even though the United States plays a lead role because it has the largest military in the world, Canada does so not just because it wants to appease the Americans, but because it has an interest in working with other imperialist powers, such as the Americans or the British or the French, in maintaining what they view as stability and predictability in the global order. And so I think we need to see it that way, rather than saying, well, we're just doing what the Americans want us to do. That may be true to some degree, but it's also what the Canadian ruling class wants us to do.
Let's look a minute at who this Canadian ruling class is.
Sure. There's a long-standing theory that is far more influential than what I've been doing recently on the Canadian left, both academic and non-academic, that Canadian companies or Canadian capital is mostly controlled by traditionally the Americans. And for example, a couple years ago when a large Canadian mining company was bought out by a foreign company, actually wasn't an American, it was a Brazilian company, there was this sort of position became quite trendy again, at least in major newspapers and in some magazines, including Canadian Dimension, where they talked about the hollowing out of Canadian corporations. That is to say, there's just shells that are controlled by foreign interests. And I just don't think that's true. I think it's empirically, factually incorrect. I don't think it was accurate in the heyday of the left nationalists during the 1970s. And I think it's even less true today. And I think that argument, frankly, has been demolished by people who write on this more than I do. Such as Bill Burgess, who's an economic geographer in Vancouver, Jerome Clausen, Bill Carroll have written on this as well. The fact is that most of the Canadian companies are owned by Canadians. There has been some mergers and takeovers by foreign companies in Canada, that's true. What that really reflects, though, is an international trend where you see increased foreign takeovers and melding of capital from different countries in most of the global north. It happens in the United States, it happens in England, and so on. And in fact, countries like England and France have a higher rate of foreign direct ownership into their countries than does Canada. Would we say Britain is a colony of the United States or some other country? It would sound ridiculous. I don't think it's true. So we need to stop blaming the Americans for all the bad things that Canada does. The responsibility is Canada. It's not America. And there's nothing necessarily progressive about Canada. What makes Canada... what will make Canada more progressive is struggles by people who challenge Canadian companies. So, yeah, just be clear. Canadians own most of the Canadian capital.
If you want to delve into the psychology of why do we feel the need to sort of wrap ourselves in a blanket of lies, essentially?
Well, I guess there's a few things I would say to that. I don't know that there's an easy answer to that. But I guess I would point out, to be fair to Canadians, that I think if you were to ask a lot of Americans, they might not have as critical a view of what the American government does abroad as we'd like them to. Which is not to say that there aren't Americans who are quite critical, who might identify the U.S. as imperialist, or Britons who might identify the British as imperialist, or the French might identify France as imperialist. But obviously, in imperialist countries, there are lots of people who don't necessarily... their state that way. But in Canada, I think there's a long history of this that is complicated on the left and that we don't have time to go into, but it goes back really to the Communist Party in the 1930s when they basically really began to take up this position that Canada was an oppressed or dominated nation by the United States. And when the new left emerged in the 1960s and 70s, that they inherited some of that position. And the new left also emerged at a time when the United States was engaged in the war in Vietnam. And it's hard to find a more explicit, violent example of imperialism than the war in Vietnam. And you had American draft dodgers come to Canada. And I think that probably shaped people's view who developed politically in the New Left and the ideas that were part of the Canadian New Left. And it was an easier conclusion to come to than to do a little bit more rigorous research to try and explain that even though Canada wasn't participating in the Vietnam War, there are a number of ways we might be able to identify Canada as an imperialist. And of course, Canada was the peacekeeper, and around that time also there was the mythology of Pearson was really being pushed. And it became the sort of dominant discourse. And we still haven't worked our way out of that dominant discourse, even though myself and other people, Eve Engler and others, are slowly trying to pull it apart and to challenge it and to show that even people like Pearson were extremely problematic. Noam Chomsky did that as well. Were quite problematic and were in many respects quite supportive of the American war in Vietnam and allowed for Canadian arms to be sold for the American prosecution of that war. But people who are more critical have been going against the grain, really. And so that's not really, I guess, a clear, straightforward answer, but I think that what it requires is that we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do in unpackaging a lot of this, but I think it's slowly starting to change because the war in Afghanistan, because of Canadian mining companies, they're so egregious in what they do. I think there's an opening, small opening, where people who are more critical can find some space to start to challenge it and at least get people thinking, at least get them thinking. So it's something to build on. That's my sort of glass is half full.
Thanks very much for your time, and thanks for writing this great book.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you.